Big Finish presents Doctor Who Short Trips. The Best Laid Plans by Ben Tedds. Read by Jacob Dudman. I want an idea, said the author, said the husbands, said the postman, and Draxil Forg, ideas by trade, plucked from thin air exactly what they were looking for. To the author, Draxil sold the most original solution to a murder mystery ever written. To the husbands, this is how your kitchen should look. To the postman, yes, you're in the wrong career. Have you ever considered real estate? The author sent him a copy of the book and a small percentage of royalties. The husbands invited him for dinner, and Draxil returned home with the recipe for the most delicious plate of Splaghurst he had ever tasted. The postman went on to become one of Dowdonia's most profitable property moguls and assisted Draxil with a beautiful cottage on the beaches of Titania Nine. He spent a summer there, basking in the blue sunlight. His fragile turquoise skin gulping in rays it did not receive in the hours Draxil hunched over a desk, writing down every idea that popped into his head. The author and the postman had both selected their ideas after browsing through his shelves, but Draxil also offered custom orders. This is how the husbands acquired a kitchen the envy of several neighboring galaxies, and one particularly jealous moon. Whilst graphic designer or architect he was not, his off-the-cuff scribblings had resulted in a rather hefty sum of money in his bank account. He couldn't explain how he did it, or what knack he supposedly had, but he was the very definition of an ideas man. His shop was a quaint curiosity, housed in an older district of Frequine, capital of the dwarf planet Dowdonia, situated in the quiet backwaters of the Chappius Cluster. Dowdonia's contract laws were mercilessly legally binding from every angle, and Draxil's business was built through contracts. Other planets had offered greater business opportunities, but he had to stay. It felt right. The shop was squat and discreet, hidden in unrestored stone and darkish hues amongst the converted homes from Dowdonia's medieval period. It was a place to be found, not to be sought. A private, ironic joke. He thought himself very clever for it. The interior resembled a library, but instead of books, the ordered shelves were ordained with a plethora of thin files. Each had a label corresponding to its section. A file in the scientific theories section might be labelled Onjang Musto's Dynamic. One in the farming section, Cruelty-Free Egg Harvesting, each tagged with an individual price sticker, would patiently await their purchaser. Many went untouched for years. Some worked, some didn't. But for every foreseeable way the idea could go wrong, Draxil offered a 100% money-back guarantee. His reputation, impeccable. His customers, overjoyed. His lifestyle, luxurious. Too luxurious for a man who appeared the humble owner of a small, quiet shop. Draxil Forg had branched out.
200,000 ohms.
A meaty hand pushed a check across the counter. Its owner was a tall, shark-headed beast in battle armor so black it dissolved into the darkness of Draxil's back room. His pointed teeth were flecked with red.
Can you do it?
The bassy growl of Launier's voice formed the tip of a dagger in the air, poised to kill at a moment's notice. Draxil ignored this and thought of the fourth holiday home he would be buying with this latest backroom deal.
I already have.
Draxil drew from his desk drawer an envelope. There was a big confidential mark stamped upon its front. Just above the label, Idea for Domination of the Rentrop Solar System was written in a monstrously casual scrawl. Launier picked up the envelope, then paused for a moment, as if looking for hidden tricks or traps. Satisfied, he held the sealed end to his mouth, and in a quick, precise slice, used the tip of his teeth to tear it open.
Ring binders are an extra 1.2 ohms,
Draxil said, almost cheerfully, as Launier drew out several sheets of loose paper.
They do so help in keeping things in the right order.
Lornier ignored him, reading. His thorax rumbled as another growl formed.
This is utter rubbish!
His eyes blazed. Draxil swallowed. This was the usual reaction he got from these ruffians, but the regularity did little to diminish the fear it evoked.
Mr. Lornier, it's absolutely nothing of the sort.
He beamed.
Yes, you will need to kidnap several hypnotherapists. Yes, you will need to acquire the funds to convert the Hooper Moons into factory worlds. And yes, that will involve rigging the Galactic Lotto. But it is completely untraceable. The idea is entirely original, and you will be...
Draxel locked eyes with his client.
Unstoppable.
Minutes later, they shook hands, and Draxel shut his shop for the night. On his way home, he stopped at the grocer's for a pint of milk, whistling the theme to his favourite Omnivision show. I want an idea. The innocent words of those in need of creativity and joy. And now, the cause of death on autopsies. The millions of them that were to come. Business carried on as usually as possible in an unusual trade. Daldonia's foremost social media platform opened to rave reviews, started by a woman who wandered into Draxel's shop thinking it was a tourist office. The annual Galacticus Prize for Science was awarded to a previous customer of Draxel's, a baker who bought an idea to adapt their own laser technology into an incredibly accurate bread slicer, and accidentally invented the most advanced cutting tool in the history of the cluster. Draxel continued with his murkier dealings. A bank heist here, a new quasi-thermonuclear bomb there. Draxel kept a close watch on the news. Soon enough, his subscription to the Interplanetary Herald paid off. A hypnotherapist, Dr. John Smith, was reported as missing in a small column. An uninteresting story easily missed. But after a second and then a third hypnotherapist vanished, a journalist with a sharpshooter's eye joined the dots. Hypnotherapists held hostage? The paper speculated. And when the Chapitrillion's draw jackpot was collected by an anonymous winner, Draxel knew it would not be long until Lornier's plan would be coming to fruition. On a morning soon after, Draxel switched on his Omnivision set. He was delighted to see news reports that the Rentrop solar system was currently being enslaved by an army of hypnotic robot drones. As he tucked into his breakfast, a reporter on the scene narrated,
They came this morning, first picked up in the Rentrop's East Quadrant. Researchers have followed the data trails, and they seem to have come from the Hooper Moons. Who or what is responsible for this systematic enslavement has yet to...
The reporter's words were drowned out by a mechanical hum. Suddenly, she screamed. Spirals of green light whirled around her heads. Their source, a basketball-sized robot, hovering just inside the image frame. In moments, the transformation was complete. Empty eyes bored into the camera.
Stand by for transmission from your glorious leader. All hail the sharp-finned one.
The picture sputtered before being replaced by the familiar shape of Lornier.
People of the Rentrop solar system.
His guttural growl articulated.
I hereby claim all of you as slaves of Galactic Conqueror Lornier. Resist my hypnodrones and perish.
Draxel drank this all in. He tingled, brimming with anticipation, excitement, perhaps both, and with a hint of power thrown in. His biggest idea yet. The feeling of knowing what an idea his idea had done. He had never felt this alive with the smaller ones. It mattered not whether it was for good or evil. The ideas. He drummed the plate with his cutlery, eager for Lornier to continue reading from his prompter.
You will serve me, and only me,
he carried on.
And you shall be building great machines for the war on rubbish dumped into the oceans.
Draxel's fork stopped halfway to his mouth. Launier was equally confused by what he had just read.
Oi! Get one of the technical maggots in here! Prompts packed in!
Ordo, no fault,
said a voice from off-screen.
A new plan I came up with.
Dr. Smith!
Launier got to his feet, head out of frame, but the fury in his voice was visual enough.
Start the prompter again, now!
Well, I thought your plan was rubbish, which got me thinking about rubbish. How we could have a system-wide spring clean.
Dr. John Smith had a cheeky but authoritative tone and an accent that Draxel couldn't quite place.
Get it back on track in 3 seconds or you're dead, you decaying relic!
Launier bellowed.
Well, that's the problem. Rubbish doesn't decay quickly, plastics especially. You ought to be using this network hijack to encourage recycling, not threatening everyone with your stupid, brain-dead cliches.
Launier snarled and bounded forward. There was a loud crashing and slamming, then white noise pierced Draxel's ears, the Omnivision screaming a technicolor tantrum. The screen was black. Egg yolk had dribbled onto Draxel's lap from where he was still sitting, petrified as a statue, breakfast not quite reaching his mouth. The buzz, the thrill, were now as dead as his bacon. A fly landed on his wrist, suddenly awaking him from his stupefaction. Draxel got to his feet and began to prepare himself to go to the shop. He reasoned he would be seeing Launier later in the day, and of course he would be happy to refund. After all, the contract's money-back clause had very clearly specified that rebellious hypnotherapists were a foreseen circumstance and grounds for a full refund. His reputation would be intact. But upon his eventual appearance that evening, Launier did not slam his copy of the contract on Draxel's desk and demand recompense. Instead, he bellowed one word.
Doctor!
Pardon me, Mr. Launier, Draxel asked.
The doctor!
Launier spat, kicking over a filing cabinet.
Who is he?
One of the hypnotherapists chosen, Dr. Smith. I'd quite like to know as well.
Draxel opened a cupboard and brought out a pair of tumblers and a decanter filled with a neon yellow liquid. Filling one of the tumblers, he offered it to Launier, who threw it at the wall.
He were no hypno-watched. He were lying, spying scum!
He wasn't a hypnotherapist? Draxel whirled around, mind racing.
No, Forg, he weren't. He were a god.
Launier looked to Draxel, and the anger had morphed into something that took him aback. Fear.
A snap of his fingers. That's all it took. Every one of those drones we've been building.
You've been building, said Draxel, quick to disassociate himself.
Whatever. They all sprouted these funny stick-arm things, dived into the seas, and started collecting all the food wrappers and bottles and everything. Then they were planting trees and rescuing animals from carrier bags.
How impudent.
I don't know how he did it, but I'm going to find him, and then I'm going to get him.
Launier cracked his knuckles.
Before that, Forg, I want my money back. Right now.
Draxel twitched. He wanted nothing more to refund the money, to keep Launier happy and, more importantly, his impeccable reputation intact. But there were greater forces at work than his mere desires.
Mr. Launier, I'm afraid that I have to tell you that...
Draxel faltered for a moment. Drool seeped from the corners of his client's mouth.
I have to tell you that I cannot return the money. There has been no breach of contract.
Why, you snivelling little cheapskate?
A bead of sweat dripped down Draxel's forehead as he opened a filing cabinet. He pulled out Launier's contract, shaking.
Section 16B, money back, stipulates that the refunding of payment has to be justified by foreseeable circumstances. Examples specific to this plan included being caught in the act of the illegalities required to fulfill it, bad weather causing malfunction in hypnodrones, and being unable to ensure cooperation of hypnotherapists.
Draxel looked away.
By your own admission, Mr. Launier, the doctor wasn't a hypnotherapist, and thus not a unique circumstance. You said he was a god. That's something outside reasonably foreseeable intervention.
And?
Draxel, still trembling, traced a finger over more legal jargon.
Daudonian law states that contracts are legally binding in every respect. If there are no contractual grounds to refund, legally, I can't give you your money back.
The expected strangulation came at last. As Draxel gasped for air, Launier shot a white-hot glare into his eyes.
You slimy, cheating sack of donkey guts! You owe me 200,000!
I can't! Draxel choked. Not legal! Tax office would find out!
A sudden brainwave. Frantically, his hands searched, scrabbling along the wall. Launier noticed.
What are you doing, maggot?
Panic button.
Draxel lied as he purposefully jabbed the stonework.
Police on their way!
Launier growled, then dropped to Draxel, who collapsed on the floor, wheezing. He barely had a moment to get up before a heavy boot slammed into his chest.
We are not done, Fogg!
He heard Launier say, darkness engulfing his vision. It took 2 weeks to repair and clean the shop. Shelves had been ransacked and shoved to the floor, broken and splintered. Carefully kept records were torn to shreds. Not that it mattered. Draxel wasn't a fool and had digital copies of every idea and contract. But he liked the tangibility, the physicality, of being able to rummage through drawers or pull a folder off a shelf. He had barely put the finishing touches to the shop when he was interrupted by the tinkle of the bell on the door. Draxel turned around, a green jelly squeezed into a goopy suit.
Mr. Draxel Fogg?
Harag Furmore's sliding mouth managed to articulate.
Your idea is faulty. I want a refund.
A refund?
Draxel licked his lips nervously.
What has happened?
A gentleman who called himself the doctor happened, Mr. Fogg.
Furmore, a customer of a month prior, explained how their assassination attempt on their stepfather had gone awry. The stepfather's new chef, the doctor, had managed to not poison Chansom Furmore at a single stage of their 17-course meal.
I wanted his head with the cheese and wine!
Furmore jiggled with rage.
Most unfortunate, yes, but...
Draxel steeled himself for what was to come.
The doctor was not a foreseen circumstance.
Furmore swatted this away.
You told that to Launier the first time this doctor showed up.
So Launier had done what Draxel had feared.
From then on, he should have been foreseeable. The contract was written before the doctor was foreseeable. I have nothing more to say to you. Good day, Mr. Furmore. Better luck next time.
Next time?
Furmore rasped.
My stepfather is suing me. The doctor told him everything, said he'd seen jellyfish with more brains. No, you have better luck next time. The next time I'll be demanding what you owe, it'll be in court.
And with that, the quivering being squeezed out of the shop. The next day, Draxel didn't have a single customer who had encountered the doctor. He had three. The first two, Shenri and Alden, were quickly carted away by the authorities. Arrested on suspicion of treason, yelling until they were yellow in the face.
The doctor! The doctor! The doctor!
The third Draxel saw on the news, one of his own species.
Well, I had some dark thoughts, see?
Laughed Wayfrank Schwitz. Her interviewer smiled politely.
And then this bloke turned up, an old bloke, calling himself the doctor.
Draxel spat out his water.
He was a bit cross and asked me how I'd like someone stealing my land with legal mumbo-jumbo and turning it into a slate quarry. I said I wouldn't, so instead I turned Schwitz Mining Corp into Schwitz Nature Reserves, a totally charitable, non-profit organisation.
He had negotiated a portion of Schwitz's profits, but the contract had stipulated they should only come from Schwitz Mining Corp, no other company. The feeling of satisfaction Draxel had at seeing the outcome of his ideas was beginning to ebb away. There was the doctor once more, interfering, changing, meddling. If this doctor continued to destroy his credibility, he was going to eventually fiddle Draxel out of holiday cottages, then out of business, then out of home. There must be a way of stopping him. A percentage of his profits, perhaps? A meeting had to be arranged. No, forced. A trap. A scheme so deadly and dastardly, this doctor couldn't help himself from getting involved. Unfortunately for Draxel Forg, ideas and schemes by trade, he had an appointment tomorrow afternoon. Its main bulk was a metal shell the size and shape of a lopsided house. Instead of bathrooms and kitchens, inside was an interlocking web of electronics. Computer circuits, frequency destabilizers, atomic accelerators, and in the center, about where the staircase would be, a large chamber filled with charge-generating rods that would crackle purple, then expel a lightning bolt to a giant TV aerial-like structure that protruded from the machine's front. The quantum macromizer was a thing of horrifying beauty.
"If it works, you've outdone yourself, Draxel,"
said Clevin of Goba. She was a hardened middle-aged woman in combat gear and was trying very hard not to look pleased.
"Not at all, my dear. It is merely my job," Draxel replied.
Clevin's commission had been simple: a weapon capable of destroying a whole planet. With not enough money at her disposal for an interstellar battle station, the next best option was the quantum macromizer.
"How exactly does the macromizer function?"
Clevin asked, tilting her head. Its engineer, a tall man with short grey hair, looked up from where he was waggling a tubular, buzzing remote at a control panel.
"Relative macromizing," he said,
relishing every syllable.
"You see, it's possible to scale up every object by a certain ratio. But physics, often gravity, will glance in its direction and demand to know what on earth it thinks it's doing and halt it at an upper boundary. But how can you circumnavigate that? What if I want a hot dog the size of the Empire State Building?"
He frowned.
"Actually, the question is why I'd want a hot dog in the first place. But anyway, this is where the quantum aspect of the quantum macromizer comes in."
He pointed to a gauge on the control panel that read Gyrinium supply.
"Use Gyrinium to conduct incredible amounts of electrical charge, break the relative scaling boundaries of the subject, and push it beyond what gravity can sustain."
He patted the control panel, which beeped affectionately.
"Before you can blow a raspberry at relative physics, your subject collapses in on itself. Boom. No, unboom. A black hole."
"It's perfect,"
Clevin grinned at last.
"The chappiest cluster held to ransom. Where shall the harvest begin? Titania 7, 8, 9?
"Well, I've got a cottage on 9, said Draxel weakly.
These kinds of specifics, the life and death of billions, was not something he wanted a part of.
"8 it is.
Then he'll come."
Draxel rubbed his hands together.
"This doctor..."
Clevin shifted uneasily.
"I don't want him throwing any spanners in the works, Draxel."
"He's more of a screwdriver fellow, actually,"
he muttered, though he was unsure where this information had come from. Clevin shot him a confused glare.
"What I meant was, if he does, I shall be ready to capture and negotiate with him. Can I kill him?"
Clevin asked, a hungry look in her eyes.
"Only if you absolutely must. I prefer to reach an agreement between us. It is rather tricky to make bargains with the dead."
Clevin nodded.
"If all goes to plan, you'll see me on the evening news."
Draxel returned a curt smile and left the hangar. Behind the counter of the main shop, Draxel was turned to face the wall, humming as he arranged his special offers display. This week, 2 for 1 on film ideas. He heard the soft ding of the doorbell.
Come in, please. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask.
He called over his shoulder.
Pick a card,
said a voice that Draxel found oddly familiar.
Nine of spades,
he replied, thoughtlessly. Draxel turned and was surprised to see Clevin's engineer. He was smiling, almost triumphantly. He peered at his face and felt a sudden flutter. Was it in the eyebrows, so vicious they ought to be taken to a laboratory and weaponized? Or the eyes themselves, ancient and knowing?
Did Clevin send you my way? Are you looking for anything in particular?
If you know a way to make everyone less of an idiot, I'm all ears, actually. If you know a way to make them all ears, that'd be a start.
The engineer plucked a file off one of the novel ideas shelves at random and opened it. Draxel bounded forward.
Sir, these ideas are fresh, and they will expire if opened without purchasing them first.
Hush,
was the taut reply.
This'll never work. Make a theme park with dinosaurs? What's so interesting about dinosaurs? They're just big lizards with anger issues.
The customer tossed the file over his shoulder.
Sir?
Doctor. Don't call me sir.
The doctor looked at Draxel, who was standing completely slack-jawed.
Well, wipe that gormless expression off your face. You could use that mouth as a fruit bowl.
Doctor,
Draxel finally managed to stammer.
This wasn't the plan. You sabotaged her.
Sabotage? Just dismantling her ridiculous superweapon herself.
The doctor reached into his coat and tossed a copy of the Intergalactic Herald to Draxel, who warily unfolded the newspaper. He gasped.
Clevin of Goba, named Citizen of the Millennia?
It was impossible. But there she was, receiving a Galacticus Award, with a genuine, earnest, humbled smile on her face. An older face, lined, grey strands of hair about her shoulders. Draxel looked at the date on the paper. It was for 32 years in the future.
It's not true.
Clevin of Goba wants money. She wants easy money.
The doctor laughed.
Well, turns out there's a way to make more money with a quantum macromizer than by threatening planets.
He snatched the paper back from Draxel and opened it up to the colour supplement inside, showing the name and history of a charity, The Harvest.
Remove the quantum aspect, scale up food, sell it at low prices, and use excess waste on famine-stricken planets, as well as your machine, to grow their harvests. Then, profit on the side.
That sounds perfectly reasonable.
Draxel couldn't think of anything else to say. It did, after all, help the needy and result in no deaths.
Of course, once you start being charitable, it's difficult to stop.
The doctor continued.
So profits go back into the business, finding more ways to prevent starvation and water shortages and the like? A perfect, beautiful feedback loop. All your fault.
Draxel bristled.
Fault? You make it sound like I've done something untoward.
Why does a disgruntled ex-reality TV star have a giant death ray? Where do fishes get armies of flying hypnodrones? How come gelatin-based desserts manage not to poison their stepfathers?
The eyebrows dropped like Draxel's stomach.
You're Draxel Fork. We're going to kill people. And have not so much as a twinge of remorse.
No, you've got it all wrong.
Draxel tried looking anywhere that wasn't the doctor, but his eyes were unrelenting magnets.
These are just ideas. I sell ideas, and people do with them as they wish. It's their choice.
My God!
The doctor looked in awe.
The pudding brains are no longer the stupidest species in the cosmos.
He noted Draxel's confused look.
There was once a bloke called Albert Einstein. Impressive moustache, surprisingly good at Tetris, and great at sums. One day, he realised he'd accidentally worked out a way to blow people up, so wrote to President Puddingbrain to warn him. The president decided the best way to counter this threat would be to blow up other people first, and Albert, a moral man, said the letter was the greatest mistake of his life.
Draxel swallowed.
He sounds remarkable.
No, Draxel. He was better than that. He was human. You, however, are remarkable.
The doctor checked his watch, then retrieved a card from his pocket.
Tell me again, what are the Daldonian card suits?
Odd question, Doctor. Root, cloud, volcano, and tide. 8 cards in each suit.
The doctor presented him with an unfamiliar card.
So how did you know that I had the 9 of spades earlier?
There was no other explanation. This doctor was utterly mad.
No, I'm not!
The doctor grumbled.
Not what?
Mad! You just thought it!
I did no such...
Ah, that's the thing about being mildly psychic, Draxel, the doctor said dismissively. It works both ways. Amplify the emotion and just strengthen the signal.
You're psychic,
Draxel sighed. Things were beginning to make sense.
No, Draxel, you are.
There was a moment of stunned silence.
Picture this, said the doctor. There's an architect, and he's on a night out, passing your shop, stuck for ideas, has nothing. Or so he thinks.
The doctor tapped his temple.
In the back of his mind, his subconscious is ticking away, building, shaping. Then when all hope seems lost, it'll offer up what it has calculated. Unless you get there first. You think the ideas come to you at random, but you're stealing them and selling them back to the owners, implanting the idea to come in later as they pass. If they don't, then it's a rubbish idea, at least for them. But someone will find it, and it will be perfect.
I'm not a thief, Draxel insisted. My ideas, they're just that.
A book landed on Draxel's desk.
Explain that, then.
He peered at it. Jurassic Park by one Michael Crichton.
Your ideas are travelling, Draxel. Dinosaur theme park, the science is all wrong, but a bestseller.
I've had enough of your fairy stories.
The doctor checked his watch again.
Why always call them fairy stories? It's not like they didn't happen. The princess with the pea cheated, by the way. It was fitted with blue turf.
Please leave my shop, you senile, good for nothing.
Every shelf in the room shook. The ground quaked. The bell rang again and again.
What's happening?
Draxel yelled over the din.
Right on cue,
the doctor grinned.
Take a look.
Running to the window, Draxel could just see in the local park an enormous, sleek spaceship landing. On its side, in gold paint, a gavel.
Eagle Man,
the doctor said as he joined Draxel at the window.
From Shanroth, planet of the lawyers. That's one of their justice cruisers. Action lawsuit class, I shouldn't wonder.
A ramp hissed down in a cyclone of steam and pistons. Out came a sharp, beaked bird in an even sharper suit carrying a briefcase.
I think he has his sights set on your shop, Draxel.
Panic set in.
Planet of the lawyers? No such place!
The doctor tuttered.
Some of your customers aren't very happy with how your ideas have or haven't turned out. Contract disputes. How many years can you get for that?
It depends on how many people are disputing.
The doctor turned to face Draxel. The look of gloating glee in his face was gone, replaced by something solemn, akin to duty.
You didn't know what you were doing. I don't have a problem with you selling ideas, Draxel. I do have a problem with you becoming a consulting agency for tyrannical murderers. You aren't a bad person. You just like your job too much. You looked for a way to make it more interesting, giving you more influence over causality. Now that has backfired.
The doctor drew from his coat 2 files, resembling exactly the ones in the shop.
But there are ways out.
You bought from me?
Flabbergasted, Draxel pointed at the folders.
Long time ago, I doubt you'd remember, 2 ideas. Ways of escaping the law.
The doctor unsealed them and presented each to Draxel.
The first one, run. Never interfere, never look back. Live on the streets, stay low, consider yourself lucky if you find a 3-day-old bacon roll.
And the other?
Draxel asked, very conscious of the approaching eagleman.
You can use your powers for good. Go elsewhere, change your name. Do what I've done with your more interesting clients.
I can't do either. How am I supposed to live? How am I supposed to make people's lives better?
You've already been doing it. Have your own idea for once.
Draxel stared, white-faced, at the two pieces of paper in front of him. The Eagleman was undoubtedly heading straight for the shop.
I don't have the right idea.
One of these is the right one for you, Draxel.
The doctor waved the papers at him.
Which one is it?
He had come to the planet when it was belching fire at its citizens, their choked cries smothered in ash and flame. Now the skies were blue, the sea steady yet still, towns rebuilt, harvests bountiful. The man formerly known as Draxel Forg was old and ill. He was watching what he knew would be one of his last sunsets. It was a particularly good one, draping a safe night over a grateful planet. He was proud. It was only one world, but it couldn't have survived without him. As the stars began to twinkle, the man was suddenly struck by a thought, one that had been formulating for some time. He reasoned, a very, very long time. He was reminded of something a customer had once told him. The best laid plans are the ones that get you where you needed to be, not where you wanted to go. The man had been laying plans like patios all his life, but always for other people. It was only now that he considered if he might have laid one, a great, grand, master plan for himself. No, it was a silly thought, a quaint curiosity of a fleeting inspiration. The man formerly known as Draxel Forg leant back, lost in thought. Where did they come from, those ideas?